Your industry is unique. It faces its own challenges and risks that set it apart. That means choosing just any insurance company just won't cut it. At The Hartford, we take pride in knowing the ins and outs of your industry and help provide solutions that suit how you do business. From liability and property insurance to workers' comp and more. At The Hartford, we don't just talk about specialization, we live it. Learn how The Hartford can help your business at thehartford.com.
This is Bloomberg Business Week with Carol Masser and Jason Kelly on Bloomberg Radio.
There's nothing wrong with the capitalism.
Yeah, there isn't anything wrong with capitalism, although there certainly could be tweaks to the system. I mean, we're believers in capitalism, but
fair.
We could potentially do it better. Perfect topic to talk about, considering our focus on MBA programs this week about how business schools can really help restore trust in capitalism. Well-known voice in the world of finance and economics joining us in our Bloomberg Interactive Brokers studio, Anat Admati, professor of finance and economics at Stanford Graduate School of Business, based, of course, in California, but here in New York. So nice to see you again.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Before we got going, we said, Jason and I were talking with you, saying we've been having some high-level conversations with folks on Wall Street and the investment community. They are aware of a lot of things, the inequalities in our society, taking a look at, you know, the responsibilities of Wall Street and the financial community. Tell us a little bit about your writing recently.
Well, I got involved in this figuring out what's going on with the financial system after the financial crisis. And
right.
It's where I first started questioning my own assumptions and our assumptions, both in the teaching and in the research that we do about, you know, what it takes to be successful, and the assumption that where you're successful in those metrics, you know, stock price is high, you know, profits,
right,
that is somehow it, per, you know, Milton Friedman, then you're doing your social responsibility. And maybe not quite. Maybe while you do that, you actually end up undermining the things that Milton Friedman assumed were in place, which is the competitiveness of markets,
right,
the no and fraud and people, deception, all of those things.
And assuming people would do the ethical right things to get to that, you know, pushing up the stock price, right? That would do the right thing along the way.
Well, he assumes the rules of society as embodied in the law and in the ethical customs are all that you else you need,
right,
and competition, which somehow comes about.
And one of the things that you bring up in a piece, and we'll tweet it out so folks can see it, is that we seem to have lost a bit of civic engagement in a lot, mm-hmm, of ways, that companies are not maybe as attached, or not just attached, but certainly not embedded in their communities the way that they once were. Why?
Well, I mean, it comes, I actually emphasize the bad word in the business community and the sort of bad rap that governments get. Now, governments fail, but we have to ask why.
Yeah.
So the civic mindedness is really about engaging in who sets rules. The rules can be set in the private markets through, you know, terms of service or whatever other promises you make that you'll be good to your customers or whatever, you know, whatever legal, contractual, or implicit other ways, reputation wise that you say I'll be good, or I am good, or I'm donating to this, or whatever I'm doing. And then we somehow think, well, you know, the rest, if I don't have incentives to do that, then, you know, the government will take care of it. But we either malign the government or actually undermine the government. And that's part of being successful in business, is the paradox of it.
What's the balance, though, Anat? And I hear what you're saying, that you mean government has a role in oversight. I think about the generic drug
story. How do you enforce contracts? How do you actually make any market work? So this notion of free market somehow arising in nature.
What is the balance between government oversight and free markets? Like, take big technology right now that we're going into. Like, what's the right balance here?
This great question, because I actually got curious about that, and also because I was so mired in banking and the financial sector that I decided to take a look at the tech sector and taught a course called Is the Internet Broken? Just to kind of learn the set of rules, or for that matter, no rules, that govern the internet. And so in the internet, we trusted markets to do sort of pressure on content moderation. We gave immunity to platforms from content reliability. And so they want the best of all worlds. On one hand, they say they're intermediaries in a platform like a telephone company. On the other hand, they're not media, so they don't need decency or any of that. And but by the way, they can read your email and then surveil you.
All right. So a bunch of CEOs came out, Business Roundtable, and essentially said, not just about profits anymore. There were some people who said, huzzah, this is great. They're finally getting the joke. There were other people who said, you know what? It's hot air. It's empty promises. What do you make of it?
Well, you know, nothing
shattering.
Nothing shattering happened to the stock price. So on one level, they were saying what they were already doing, right. Big deal. They just informed us that they're doing that. You know, on the other hand, you have laws in Delaware, and there started being a debate about what the law actually is for C corporations, opposed to, you know, they were not saying we're going to become benefit corporations, which are a legal thing, but they'll need 2/3 of shareholders to approve and all of that. Benefit corporations are actually doing all these things and are legally sort of permitted to take care of everybody. Now, what does it mean to take care of everybody? If it's a win-win-win-win-win-win-win, then no problem, right? Everybody's happy.
Right.
You know, you take care of your customer for your shareholders because you want to be loved. All of those things, you know, would work anyway. So it's like, why do you need a statement to say that? So what was the content of the statement actually when it comes to conflicts of interest, to how much do you pay or whether you do or don't write the non-compete agreement or the mandatory arbitration or whatever else?
I feel like there's a bigger issue. We're running out of time, so we'll have to have you come back at some point. But I really do feel like it's a bigger issue of accountability kind of across all levels. We are living in this interesting time.
Keyword.
Where we don't know.
Private
we see it.
And public.
Correct.
And government corporations. How do you keep people with power accountable?
Safe travels back home.
Thank you.
Imani. She's, of course, professor of finance and economics at Stanford Graduate School of Business, based in California, in our New York studio on this Friday. You're listening to Bloomberg Radio.
All right, so fly like an eagle, or maybe in some cases, fly like a chief, because we're talking about John Owen. He's the CEO of AirShare, based out in Kansas City, Missouri. One of his customers is Patrick Mahomes, who makes his living in the NFL.
That's right.
So great to have you here in New York City. We are both, I think it's fair to say, fascinated by this business, because if you said to people a few years ago, maybe even 5 years ago, 10 years ago, certainly, you know, sort of private air travel is going to be much more accessible, much more flexible in a lot of ways, I'm not sure they might have believed you, but this is a business in many ways that's sort of having a moment. Why?
It is. There's obviously a lot of models in private aviation. Ours specifically is a day-based model. We've been around about 20 years, and we sell days versus hours. What everybody's kind of accustomed to is buying a bucket of hours, and we sell days, which means a lot of what we do caters to business customers because we offer a couple different rates. You can go out and back in a day, or you can hit multiple locations in a day. The airplane also stays with you. A lot of other programs, an airplane may drop you off and another airplane may pick you up later in the day. But with us, you have full access to the plane and pilots, that if you're going out for a particular meeting in the middle of the day and you say you want to leave your home at 8 o'clock and come back at 5 o'clock, well, the pilots are there waiting for you whenever you're ready. So if the meeting gets done early, you call them on the way to the airport, go home by 1 o'clock. If you need to stay for dinner, you call them, tell them you're going to stay a little later. If you need to hit another location in a day, you can do that as well. So it really starts to feel like your airplane in our program.
I'm in, John. I'm just going to say that. but you know what I'm thinking? Whenever we do a segment like this, everybody always kind of messages us, emails us and says, okay, so how much does this cost? Like how, you know, accessible is it to most people? Give us an idea of the cost structure.
I'd say it's not an inexpensive way to travel, obviously, but it's really a necessary productivity tool for businesses. For us, it really depends on the way you want to fly. We operate two different airplanes in our fractional division, Phenom 100 and 300. They're both light jets, so they are a little more expensive than some of the big jets that you commonly see. For a Phenom 100, which is a four-seat jet, we have a rate that's as low as $1,600 an hour if you're doing that round trip, which is, in this space, is extremely economical.
Yeah. Right, especially compared to how many people in that plane?
Four to five people. Yep.
Okay.
And so how do you keep the cost low in this situation? Because this is an area where it feels like the cost could creep up pretty high. And let's be honest, it's not inexpensive to just put these in the air, to keep the pilots and all of that, the maintenance, et cetera.
No, and that's one of the huge differentiators between AirShare and everybody else is the planes aren't moving around with nobody on it trying to pick up other people. So again, the plane is yours for the day. You operate it exactly how you want it. You can add locations, take off locations. But if we take you out to, say, Denver for a meeting, that plane's sitting on the ground waiting for you. So it's not taking off to go fly somebody else.
And it's yours.
It's yours. And there's not another airplane coming from another location to pick you up. So, you know, these planes aren't inexpensive to fly, you know, even from a cost standpoint.
Yeah.
So when that plane's sitting there, it's not costing the company any money, any additional money. So we're not going to pass it on to you. So our round trip rates, which is what we call kind of the out and back, or where you're doing it over a day or so, are 40% discount off of what people see as the typical standard rates in private aviation.
Are you guys profitable?
Oh yeah. Yeah. No, wow. We've got a good business. We've kind of been centered in the United States for a long time. We've been around about 20 years, only done the day-based model. We've revolutionized it over the last 20 years, and we kind of feel like we're the best-kept secret in private aviation. That's, you know, a big reason we're here today is to announce our expansion to the upper Midwest, which will include markets such as Chicago, Louisville, Cincinnati, and then from there, we'd like to get into the Northeast and Southeast as well.
Are most of your trips, John, like a half-a-day trip, or what are they typically?
I'd say about 80% of our customers are businesses. Mm-hmm. So, and that translates into about 2/3 of the flights being those round trip flights, those day based flights where they're out and back in a day, or they're kind of running around for 4 or 5 different locations over a couple days.
So look around the corner for us. What does private aviation, look like in 5-10 years? Is it going to be much more widely accessible? Is that even possible?
We have seen a lot of new entrants into the market over the last few years with a lot of different models, you know, shared seats, mm-hmm. Uber type deals. What we do is exactly what we've done and always will do. Yeah. Or you know, it's we cater to the business customer that really needs the flexibility of that airplane throughout the day.
Do you think in terms of an economic downturn, this would not impact you guys?
We've been around 20 years again, and
so you've seen the financial crisis.
We've seen it. We've been through it.
What was
that
like?
And we actually grew through it.
You did.
Because since we operate these lighter jets that are just a more economical way to travel, we get a lot of the filtering down from the bigger jet companies. Mm-hmm. And also, if you've got a business that owns their airplane and they go through a recession, well, they don't want to give away that productivity and that flexibility of using private jets. So they may sell their whole airplane and come to us for...
Are you seeing a lot more of that? I know coming off of the crisis, we definitely saw a lot of corporations, certainly those who had, you know, CEOs maybe testifying, yes, before lawmakers, but a lot of them saying, you know, we don't need to have a private jet. We don't need to own it. There's different ways of doing it.
That's exactly right. We say the tipping point's about 250 hours.
Okay.
So if you can fly at least 250 hours, it's probably makes sense to own your own airplane. But if not, and you may need 50 hours or, like in our case, 20 days. And that's the other thing about our program is, since you buy the day, you get as many hours as you want.
Right.
So 20 days, if you're a customer that maybe have a 3-hour flight to the West Coast from the center of the United States and a 3-hour flight, that's 6 hours. So we commonly have customers with what's commonly known as a share in our industry get 80, 90 hours out of a share versus 50 hours is what you a lot of see.
Interesting.
I don't think we could get this through TV.
Yeah, we can try.
Exactly. I don't think we can.
Yeah.
as sweet as it might
be. Keep an eye on our expenses,
hey guys, but we can work while we're on the plane.
We'll be working. Maybe we could even broadcast. All right. John Owen, CEO of AirShare, based out in Kansas City, Missouri, here with us in New York City today.